glass. To left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, November 6th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, and soon for your eyeballs as well. We're getting there. We're getting there on Flames Talk. How are we doing, Vix?
I'm just feeling bad for people that are going to have to watch, too.
That's down the road.
It's down the road.
They got lots of time to, you know. I can
get my hair done, yeah. And, you know, get a new wardrobe. I'm sure it'll be fine.
You can go pay $75 U.S. for a shave in Nashville.
Oh. I don't think it was quite 75. It was probably 75 with the conversion.
Yeah.
But it was probably close to 50 bones.
Hey, I came away really encouraged with that 3-2 overtime win over Montreal on Tuesday night. And not just because they found a way to win, not just because they stuck with it. And I thought they were the better team for the final 40 minutes and 7 seconds by a significant margin. Not just because I thought they deserved the 2 points as a result. And not just because of Matt Coronato's banner night. I thought the biggest thing coming from that game, or at least my biggest takeaway, and the reason I came away most encouraged, was I just thought it was really cool to see who led the way in Montreal. So Connor Zeri opens the scoring. You have Matt Coronato have his great night, score the 2 gorgeous goals to tie and win the game. You've got Kevin Ball, who had himself another really good night on Calgary's blue line. He was all over it, and multiple times you took note of Kevin Ball. And Dustin Wolf had a really solid night between the pipes. He was stellar in the first period, and then a whole lot less busy in the backstretch of the hockey game, but still had to make some huge stops, because even though Montreal didn't get a lot of zone time in the second and third period, when they did create opportunities, they were pretty dangerous ones. And so we know how difficult that can be on a goalie when you're kind of not doing anything, and then next thing you know, a quality opportunity is staring you in the face. And I thought Dustin Wolf was really outstanding. That is a real youth-served type of game for the Calgary Flames. All of the guys that I just mentioned, Zeri, Coronato, Ball, Wolf, all 24 years of age or younger, and those were the drivers of the hockey game. And that's not to say Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman and Rasmus Anderson didn't have good nights too, but it was the young players who led the way, the guys that the Flames hope and Flames fans hope are going to be a big part of this team's future that led the way. That was what was so encouraging to me coming out of a really impressive win on Tuesday night.
It's kind of funny, because on the mailbag we did on Tuesday, we were talking a lot about how do you measure success for the Calgary Flames in 24-25, and we both kind of agreed that it wasn't so much statistically or where they finish in the standings. It's you need that U24, that U25 group to continue to take steps, because that's going to be the core eventually that helps push this thing along for the Calgary Flames. So you run through the list, and that's almost exclusively the list of players that are 25 and under for the Calgary Flames that are on the active roster right now. When you mention Wolf, you mention Ball, you mention Zeri, and you mention Matt Coronato, those are the four of the biggest reasons, if not the 4 biggest reasons, why the Calgary Flames were able to take control of a game against the Montreal Canadiens, rally, and put 2 points in the bank.
Yeah, it was and look, I don't know what the rest of this season is going to look like. I don't know if they're going to make the playoff. I don't know, but you take those 4 players, you take Zane Parekh, and I know Zane might be a couple of years away from being in the NHL. You take Sam Honzek, who scored his first goal as a member of the Calgary Wranglers in a loss to Bakersfield on Tuesday night. Some of the other exciting players on the Wranglers, whether it's a Hunter Brustevich or Rory Cairns or Jacob Pelche, just you take a look at what the Flames are building from a youth perspective, that next wave of players, once Nazem Kadri, once Mackenzie Weegar, once Michael Backlund, once Blake Coleman, you know, when these guys, Jonathan Huberdeau, so on and so forth, aren't the guys leading the way, and you've got you need to have a little bit of a torch passing or a baton passing. You know, it's encouraging. And I think if you're a Flames fan, excited for the youth movement and excited for a new direction, a night like Tuesday is one of those nights that you come away really excited and encouraged and hopeful for the future.
Yeah, and if you're the Calgary Flames, if you're Craig Conroy, if you're Ryan Huska, if you're the fan base, the expectation shouldn't necessarily be that you're going to have three or four players from that U25 group step up night in, night out, and really put the team on their back and sort of will them or guide them to victory. But every once in a while, when you do get the, I don't even want to call it a perfect storm, but you do get the circumstance where it really is the young players on the team carrying the club to victory, whether it's a big save, whether it's a timely goal, whether it's a timely block, and Kevin Ball had three of those in nearly 23 minutes of ice time. It just gives you a glimpse into what this team could be 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And even if you have just one of those four, one of those five guys that fall into that category, do something special on any given night, it just gives you that hope. It gives you the reason for optimism that this thing might be something that's shorter rather than longer. And you mentioned it, that you mentioned the NHL names, but there are a lot of names still in the American Hockey League that will continue to build and grow their games and continue that up push. Yeah,
I only mentioned one guy from this most recent draft class. I didn't mention Basha or Greeden or any of the other names that people. Misa, yep. Yeah, there's a lot of excitement surrounding Calgary's 24 draft class as well.
Yep, so you take a look at what they have in the American Hockey League, and again, Cairns leads the American Hockey League in goals, if I'm not mistaken. Jacob Pelche is a point-per-game player. William Stromgren's looking to take another step. Ignatiev in net, like, you keep going on and on, and then you get to the junior ranks, you know, that 24 draft class and some members of the 23 and the 2022 draft class, and suddenly it just breeds optimism when you know that that's what's coming, but you also know that you've got impact makers already at the NHL level that can help turn a game on a dime.
Text line's open at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Mick says, I thought it said Mike for a second. Mick says, I see some good prospects coming, but there's no number one center. Roger McQueen, they need to draft high enough to get him. And Mick, I don't know what this season is going to look like. I don't know where they're going to finish. I don't know how it's going to end up. As of right now, they sit in a playoff spot in early November. You know, there's all that talk about American Thanksgiving or November 1st. Like, there's always those numbers that roll out. I don't know if they're going to be in the playoff mix until the end of the year. I don't know if they're going to fall out of it. I have no idea. What I do know is that there's a lot of things that we've seen this year that are encouraging, and there's a lot of things that make you excited for the rest of this season about the way they're going to play, but more importantly, there's a lot of things that we've seen that make you excited about what the direction of this group is and the direction that Craig Conroy has put this team on. So that to me is the exciting part. It's whether they end up drafting high enough to get a top three pick and go after a Roger McQueen, or whether they draft high enough to go after a Gavin McKenna in the 26th draft, I do not know. I cannot predict the future. But I do know that some of the youth that we've seen take the reins and who did take the reins on Tuesday in Montreal, that's exciting stuff if you ask me.
And, you know, I can't help but touch on the 2025 draft class really quickly. We're at FC Hockey. I think we've got seven centers ranked in the top 11. So it's a good year to need a center. But, yes, that is the piece that is missing most from the Calgary Flames prospect pool as it stands right now. But that doesn't diminish the reason for optimism with the group that you've currently assembled, because, one, it's incredibly deep at almost all positions, perhaps other than center. And you've already seen some contributions, whether it's last year with Zary and Pospisil, whether it's now this year with Coronado and Wolf on a more regular basis, whether it could be Sam Honzik at some point this year, Brustevich at some point this year perhaps, and then you've got Zane Parekh, your top prize prospect waiting in the wings as well. There's reason to be happy and excited with where the Calgary Flames are. I know that there's still a lot of veterans on the current Calgary Flames roster, but it's the job of the names that we've just mentioned to eventually make tough decisions on the Calgary Flames down the road, and they've started down that path.
Text line at 960-960. This says, guys, having success is great, but explain to me how you ever expect them to rebuild without getting a number one center. You need to get that through the draft, and finishing just outside the playoffs again does you no good. Well, we don't know if they're going to finish just outside the playoffs, A. But B, yes, nobody is disputing the fact that for this team to truly get to where they want to go and build themselves into a true contending group, they need that number one center. And look, there are no guarantees, but at the very least, organizationally right now, they have, I think, given themselves hope for two of the kind of cornerstone, the three cornerstone areas that you need. You need to find your goaltender. Well, Dustin Wolf might be that guy. Don't know for sure, but there's reason to be optimistic that he could be. Zane Parekh could be that guy on defense that is kind of your cornerstone defenseman. They don't have that right now at center. I'm not disputing that. And they will almost certainly have to draft that player. But that doesn't mean what we just said is false.
Well, and at the same time, too, you can end up with a top five pick and you can go and you can select your center. That doesn't guarantee that that center is going to develop into a franchise-defining type player. Like, you look even through the Calgary Flames draft history where you had Sean Monahan at number 6. You've had Sam Bennett at number 4. Elias Lindholm, not drafted by the Calgary Flames, but he was the 5th overall pick by the Carolina Hurricanes. So also just by way of having a high draft pick, unless you're basically number 1, and then even then it's not always a guaranteed swing, knock it out of the park, you're not guaranteed to have a franchise number one center with a top five pick.
By the way, somebody asks how Zane Parekh is doing. He's got 4 goals and 15 points in 13 games with Saginaw. So he maybe a little behind last year's pace, but still getting, I think there is a little slight adjustment getting back to the OHL. Parekh's having himself a good season in his first year as a member of the Flames organization, playing with Saginaw in the OHL. By the way, thought it was more than anything else, big. Just taking a look at the game as a whole, Flames deserve to win that one, right? Like that. They're sometimes you need to weather a storm, which they did for about 15 minutes in the first period. And credit to Dustin Wolf, he was a huge reason why they weathered that storm, and then they took that hockey game over. Special teams absolutely remains an issue, but I think that you really liked a lot of what you saw, especially in the final 40 minutes, 5-on-5 specifically in the final 40 minutes last night.
Yeah, the Calgary Flames certainly didn't necessarily deserve to win the first period, but that's what you have Dustin Wolf back there for, and once you were able to get past that initial 20 minutes, it was primarily a Calgary Flames-driven game where I'm sure you've got the scoring chances, but just between the second, third, and overtime, the Calgary Flames outshot the Montreal Canadiens 26-9.
And I think the 5-on-5 shot attempts off the top of my head were 52-20.
Yeah,
so they were
pretty different.
They were almost 73% in terms of 5-on-5 ozone in the final 40 minutes of play.
Now, that's not to say that the Montreal Canadiens weren't dangerous for stretches in the game, because they certainly were, and I can probably think back to 3 or 4 Cole Caulfield one-timers that Dustin Wolf fought off. So a credit to Dustin Wolf, and again, that's that U24 group, U25 group that we're talking about helping carry the Calgary Flames along. But once the Flames were able to sort of settle into that game, first period of a 3-game road trip you're just starting out on, once you're able to sort of get away from the first period where you're outshot 15-9 and potentially not really loving the start that you got, other than maybe perhaps a power play goal, you settled into your game, and then that's when the Calgary Flames were able to take over. And if you're Ryan Huska, if you're any of the guys that are in the lineup or on the trip, you must be happy with the 60-minute/7-second effort from the Calgary Flames.
By the way, for those who are interested in them either missing and you know, finishing further down in the standings for a higher pick, or for those who are super dialed on them maybe surprising everybody and making the playoffs, the update on November 6th over at Money Puck, Flames are at 16.1% in terms of their playoff chances, up from just over 11% prior to the Montreal win. And I know it's November, so tracking playoff odds.
We're getting close to that American Thanksgiving,
Mark. We are. And it's always fun to track these things throughout the year. The Flames are 16.1% over at Money Puck, behind teams like Utah and Chicago right now based on their metrics. In Western Conference teams over at Money Puck in order: Winnipeg, LA, Dallas, Vancouver, Edmonton, Minnesota, Vegas, Colorado, Nashville, Chicago, Utah, then Calgary in terms of how they and that's not just based on points. It's based on strength of schedule, underlying metrics. It's based on a whole formula that Money Puck uses. And of all the playoff projection sites, it's the one I trust the most. I don't know what percentage I trust it, but of all of them, I trust it the most. I mean,
it makes for good conversation.
It's a fool's errand to project this league, no matter how you want to do it. If you want to close your eyes and just guess, or if you want to use underlying metrics and a whole bunch of other numbers, it remains somewhat of a fool's errand because this is one of the most unpredictable pro sports leagues you're going to find.
I will say this. Money Puck is probably more accurate than me closing my eyes and throwing darts at a dartboard and having numbers represent teams. So it's something to go off of, and it's interesting to see the Calgary Flames. I don't know if I should be saying only at 16.1 or at 16.1, because I don't know necessarily where the fair analysis lies in that. But fact of the matter remains, the Calgary Flames through 13 games this season hold the first wild card spot. Now, again, we're talking November, so let's not get too excited, but you're sitting ahead of teams like the St. Louis Blues, Edmonton Oilers, Utah, Colorado. Don't know how long that holds for some of those teams, particularly the Oilers and the Avalanche. But for the time being, if you're one of the fans out there that are hoping to see some playoff hockey, enjoy the start.
Let's talk Matt Coronato, because he was the big story on Tuesday. It's nice to see him have that type of night. It's nice to see him score two big goals like that. He now has four goals on the season. He scored two against Chicago, now two against Montreal. A lot of talk now coming out of Tuesday's game. It's like, wow, Coronado's here to stay now. I think that was the case even before this recall. Coronado was not sent to the American League based on merit.
And was he down a week?
He was down for 6 days.
6 days.
Played two games, 6 days, was literally recalled 6 days after being assigned, then was back in the NHL lineup for the New Jersey game, which was 7 days after he is assigned. He was sent there for numbers reasons. He was sent there because he was not waiver eligible. He was sent there based on a numbers game, and it was always going to be temporary. We said that at the time. We said, well, like, this felt like it was not going to be a long time. This felt like this was, and the message from the organization was they needed Coronado to play while Sharon Govich started to get his feet back under him and getting back in the lineup. And they didn't know exactly how long it was going to be, but it was never supposed to be a permanent thing. An injury happens, a situation happens. Hanzek comes back and shows that maybe he needs some American League time, and bam, there's your opportunity to bring Coronado back up. Right now, Coronado is fifth on the team in 5-on-5 expected goals for per 60, third on the team in scoring chance per 60 minutes, and third in individual high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes, courtesy our friends at Natural Stat Trick. He has been a difference maker all season long at 5-on-5, and so he was never down in the American League based on merit or based on the way he was playing. It was only a circumstance thing, and so I thought that he looked like a full-time NHLer before the recall, and he still looks like a full-time NHLer now. And it just so happened he scored two really nice goals, including a franchise record-breaking goal in overtime. Now, the fastest overtime goal in franchise history was scored by Matt Coronado on November 5th, 2024, breaking Jim Poplinski's record, going all the way back to January of 1986, where he scored 13 seconds into a 5-4 win over Vancouver. I thought it was going to be, when I went into the archives to look at that and find out who the prior record was held by, I was like, it's got to be like Johnny Rest in Peace or Monahan had so much success in overtime. I was like, for sure, this is going to be one of those
Even
guys.
Jerome.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to be like 8-9 seconds. 13 seconds is still pretty quick from Pep. So, but I mean, he almost halved it.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like Matt Coronado's stint with the Wranglers this season was purely sort of transactional. The Calgary Flames are, like most teams, are carrying 23, but they're going about it with 13 forwards, 8 defense, and 2 goalies. So when you get into a situation where you have multiple forwards on IR, one comes off, you need to do something. You need to sort of react to your changing roster. Matt Coronato not needing waivers to go to the American Hockey League. It's a quick transaction. You send him down, and then you work a way to get him back up to the NHL. So, yeah, this is – that was at the time. I remember there was a lot of sort of attention and whatever the opposite of buzz happens to be when it's like, why are you sending Matt Coronato? Why do you have this young player going back down when he's contributing? Yeah, it was never going to be a long-term thing. He's back up, and he's continuing to make an impact sort of game in, game out. You ran through the advanced stats on it, and I didn't realize they were quite that high, but also at the same time not super surprised, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, he's been really good
for
him. Now he's playing with Backlund and Coleman, so now you get the benefit of those two guys doing what they always do, and that is raising the game of their line mate. And I think that we've seen that in the games Coronado's been back. And a few things we're seeing from him right now. I wanted to talk a little bit about this. His skating is clearly better now than it ever has been at the NHL level. You know, Mick made the point when we were talking on Flames Talk postgame on Tuesday night. When you see a guy who improves his skating in the way that Coronato has, now all of a sudden he can score a goal like the game-tying goal where he outskated a bunch of Habs players who were kind of closing their eyes and crossing their fingers and just hoping Montembeau makes a stop. And Coronato, he must have curled back and away from a defender 2 or 3 times, curls back and then turns on the jets and rockets into his shot from the circle and rips it past Montembeau. Like, he wouldn't have done that last season because his skating wasn't good enough. But he worked. I remember sitting down with Matt just before the start of the season, just before training camp. We were out doing a show for the Kids Sport anniversary, and he showed up in a Wranglers jersey and did an interview with GVP and I, and he just talked and I had talked to Danielle Fujita throughout the summer as well, but he just talked about how much work he did personally with Danielle, who is Calgary's skating coach, and the work that kind of she gave him to work on. Like, he has worked tirelessly with Danielle, and look, she's the best in the business, and there's another example of a guy like Connor Zary's a perfect example.
Sam Honzik's
a perfect example.
Sign Danielle to an extension.
I think they probably will. And Matt Coronato just showed you right there how much being a better skater can do for you on the ice.
So I'm going to add a layer to that because I don't disagree with your point, but I think there's more to it than just the skating. To me, he has a much better understanding of what time and space is at the NHL level and how to create it. Just thinking back to last year, how many of his shots were blocked or defended because he took a quarter second too long to release it off his stick. Now he's working himself into better shooting lanes. He's able to create more time and space for himself, again, partially because of the understanding of what time and space is at the NHL versus the AHL or back in college, where in college you'd have almost unlimited time and space. And then it's the skating ability and using your edges to sort of curl away, or, you know, Not a full on like head fake to shake an opponent, but like Andre, this, I'm not comparing them in terms of their edgework ability, but Andre Kuzmenko creates so much time and space for himself by the way he's able to lose a check by just a quick turn and all that. It wasn't quite the same extent to Matt Coronato, but he was able to shake and create time and space for himself using his edges, using his understanding of how he needs to sort of position himself inside the offensive zone, both with and without the puck, to create that space. And then capitalizes on the opportunity with what is probably his calling card, his shot. I don't know how much debate there is about that. He's an absolutely phenomenal shooter. And Sam Montembeau is more than well aware of that today, probably more so than he was yesterday.
And just that one other thing that I think has been really important, and I thought that we saw it on display in the backstretch of last year when he was called up in early March. You really saw how much better he had gotten away from the puck and what he had just his and it's not just defensive work, but it's in all three zones, you know, like where he's positioning himself when the puck's not on his stick, with or without the Flames having possession, the way that he puts himself in passing lanes, the way that he makes life difficult on breakouts for the opposing team. Like, that stuff was noticeable last year as he finished the season with the team. It's been noticeable again this year, and head coach Ryan Huska talked a little bit about that Wednesday in Boston after the Flames practiced.
And that started last year after his last call-up. When we brought him up the last time, you could tell the details to his game were significantly different. And that's why it's important to have a good American League team that really tries to play the same way that we do. And Trent and his staff really did a great job with him.
And this is a little bit from Matty on Wednesday as well, because he was asked a little bit about where his biggest improvements have been.
I think with my play away from the puck, I think I feel like I'm in the right spots, and whether it's defensively or even maybe giving myself an opportunity to get the puck more, because I'm finding ways to get open and just finding ways to be in the right spot, I think it's been important for me.
Has it been a challenge for you at the NHL level to put yourself in a position to shoot the puck, as we saw you do a couple times last night?
Yeah, I think that's something I'm continuing to learn on every day. I think there's less time and space than any other level you play, so just continuing to adjust and find those holes when you can, and I think every day you learn more and more.
How do we like him staying on the Backlund line?
You know what? We might end up actually debating this probably at greater length at some point. I think he's fine on almost any line. I don't think he's a situation where, oh man, you really would like to see him spend 70, 75 games in a season with Backlund and Coleman. I think that he would be fine on a line with Nazem Kadri. I think he'd be fine on a line with Yegor Sharangovich if that happens to be the center there. I don't think it's a situation as much that he needs to be as protected, if you will, for lack of a better term, by being shielded or insulated by having Backlund and Coleman on your line. But at the same time, I don't see any reason to split from that trio right now. Like, it's clearly working, so you might as well continue to roll it out and roll it out and roll it out, because to be quite honest, Coronado can be effective there as well. We saw it against the Montreal Canadiens. But also, I think to a certain degree, and it's part of the learning curve of jumping to the NHL, but Coronado is good in all three zones. And he has an opportunity to improve in all three zones, but he still can be an effective member of what is the de facto shutdown line for the Calgary Flames. So to sort of answer your question, yeah, you leave him there because it's worked just fine. But at the same time, if you want to shake up a couple other lines, Matt Coronado is a player that can contribute on other lines as well.
By the way, that line in their time together so far is 55.9% on their 5-on-5 possession. 10-7 high-danger chances. Expected goals up over 61%. That's for U.S. They've done it all with
but what's 30, the plus minus?
35% O-zone faceoff. 24 defensive zone faceoffs versus just 13 in the offensive zone. They've been a very good north-moving player. Driving line, and Coronado has looked very much at home on that line. Final point on Matt before we pivot to the round table. What's Coronado's ceiling? Like what I know he's 4 goals this year. He has not even spent a full season in the National Hockey League. He's in just his second professional season period. But like, what is a realistic ceiling for him? Like, what do we see him as when it's all said and done? When he is an established NHLer, what is he in this league?
I mean, still to be determined, as you mentioned, based on the fact that he hasn't even played a full NHL season, but I think the goal would have him being a top 6 winger down the road once year, seeing him at 25 years old where he's got some experience under his belt. He's a player that you'll be able to deploy in all situations. I'd be curious at some point to see whether or not the instinct can be moved to the middle, because we have seen him play center at the college level. I think he played a little bit of it at the USHL level, played it at the World Championship for Team USA 2 years ago. I'm not necessarily suggesting that we should be trying Matt Coronado at center at any time in the very near future, but for me, looking at sort of how his skills can translate, knowing that his speed is up, knowing that he's got the shot that he does, he has the IQ and the acumen in all three zones, to me, the expectation should be that he can be a top 6 winger or top 6 forward, if you will, at this level.
Yeah, I mean, I think a guy who can give you, as you mentioned, like top six, like one of your top 2 right wingers going forward. I think that is exactly what he can project to. I think he can be a 25 to 30 goal threat on a regular basis in this league. I'm not saying he's that there's 100% he's going to get there, but I think that's kind of what he projects as. A 25-30 goal scorer who gives you power play time, plays in your top six. Like I do think that's what Coronado projects to, and what we've seen from him this year is a guy that it doesn't sound crazy to say that based on what he's done so far in a very limited sample size, but still a very impressive sample size to start the season so far. Okay, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're with you here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome, and everything being produced back at our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Wednesday edition of the program continues from the Scotiabank Saddledome. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com along with you. Now Derek Wills joins us, the voice of the Calgary Flames. It's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. One thing we have not spoken about yet so far this hour is the injury the Flames sustained on Tuesday in Montreal. I felt really bad for Anthony Mantha. Grew up across the river in the Montreal area, playing basically in his backyard, and is only able to play part of the first period. Leaves late in the first period with a lower body injury and does not return. Boston on Wednesday didn't practice. So, gents, if Mantha is to miss a little bit of time and the Flames are going to go down the recall route, who are you calling up if you're the Calgary Flames?
It's actually a tough question, Pat. When I saw it was one of the topics today, the first name that popped into my head was, I think, the answer, Adam Klapka. Started the season with the team, just got sent down. He's played a couple of games with the Wranglers. If your plan is to replace Martin Pospisil, who started last night's game on the right side of the fourth line with Ryan Lomberg on the left and the Justin Kirkland up the middle, then I think he's the easiest guy to just slide into that spot to play a fourth line role. But then I thought I would just have a look at what some Calgary Wranglers are doing this season. And there are a long list of guys who, you know, from afar, I would say probably deserve a long look as far as a recall is concerned. Rory Cairns is off to a great start, leads the team in goals with 9 and points with 12 and only 11 games played. Walker Dewar is a right winger. You could easily slot him onto the right side of the fourth line. He's got 11 points in 11 games. Dryden Hunt, we got a long look at him during training camp. I think he could come in and play in an energy role, and he's been productive at the AHL level with 10 points in 11 games. Jacob Peltier went down. We're told that he's taken it the right way and has really found his game. He's got 10 points in 11 games. Sam Morton had a really strong training camp. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I still think the easiest guy to just slide into the right wing spot on the fourth line would be Adam Klapka, but guys, I think there's probably a long list of guys the Flames are looking at, and maybe that's why it's taking them so long to decide who they're actually going to call up here.
Yeah, you never want to see a guy go down to injury, but we are all well aware of the next man up mantra, and when you're looking through who could possibly come up, not necessarily to replace Anthony Mantha, but to replace a spot on the roster created by Mantha's injury, I think we probably all to a certain degree will agree that you just typically the easiest thing to do would be elevate Martin Pospisil and then look to find somebody to fill that fourth line role. And Willsey, you ran through the roll call a little bit, and I've got to give you credit because I don't know necessarily how I overlooked Walker Dewar, who has 11 points in 11 games when I'm just looking at the scoring leaders for the Wranglers. But my eye was sort of attracted most to Dryden Hunt, and I really liked what I saw out of him in training camp. And he was one of those players that I thought could push for an opening night roster spot. Of course, he ends up down with the Wranglers and is a near point per game and second on the team with a +8 rating. He's a guy that I think that could come up and could play in a little bit of a variety of roles, whether or not you want to elevate him up the lineup or whether or not you want him on that fourth line with whether it's Kirkland or Rooney along with Ryan Lomberg. But for me, I think Dryden Hunt would get my vote at this point.
There's some really, really fun things that you could kick around. I don't think, like, if it were me, as awesome as Cairns has been, I want him staying down there and continuing to play center ice and be that team's number one center. Like I want Kerens to this is the first time that he's had like some real success at this high a level. Let him keep having that success down there. That's just my opinion. I wouldn't. This is not a knock on or saying he wouldn't be deserving. It's just like, let him keep rolling down there. Let him keep building his game. Yeah, let Kerens cook in the American League. I would say the same thing about Pelche. Just let him continue to have success down there. And I think if you're going to be making this decision, you know, with Martin Pospisil, I think, responding pretty decently to everything that's happened, to getting benched, to the penalty, to then being demoted for Tuesday's game, I thought he responded pretty well in Montreal. So I think you have no problem promoting him back up the lineup into where he probably belongs in the top nine. Yeah, you're looking for a fourth line role. You've lost a right winger. Might as well just bring a right winger back in. That's why I still, you know, Wilsey, it's boring to just agree, but to me the easy one is Klapka. The coaching staff likes him. The coaching staff really liked the idea of a fourth line with Lomberg on one side and Klapka on the other. Sam Hanzek's training camp changed that a little bit because they felt like they had to reward Hanzek for how good his camp was, understandably so. So I think if they're going to go the recall road, I do think Klapka's the guy who makes the most sense, followed by Hunt. Because, again, both guys you can just plug in on that fourth line if you need to, and you're happy with it. The other thing is, if it's only going to be a game or two, you don't need to recall anybody. You can just go with the 12 forwards you have right now if you really feel like it's only going to be a game or two that Mantha has to miss. But as of right now, if they are going to go recall, if they are going to bring someone in from the Wranglers, Klapka would be the guy that gets my vote.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes the most sense. And he's a guy who, if you want to sit him in the press box, I think you feel fairly comfortable doing that. I don't think you'd want to do it long term. He's still a young, developing player, but, you know, he's played that role already this season for the Flames, and he's got a great attitude, and I think you could call him up and sit him in the press box as your 13th forward, or you could stick him in on the right side of that fourth line, and I think he'd give you some good minutes playing in a north-south physical role. So if that's the hole that the Flames are trying to fill, then I think he makes a lot of sense. But they've got a lot of good options, and you love to see the internal competition at both the NHL level and the AHL level. And Pat, last point for me, I don't think this Anthony Mantha thing's going to be long-term. Now, I'm not a doctor, and he was going to get more testing done today, and you know, maybe the Flames get bad news as opposed to good news, but I can tell you that he was walking around at the Bruins practice facility today, didn't go on the ice with the team, so hopefully that was a good sign, and hopefully we'll see him back sooner rather than later, because you know, outside of the first two or three games, I thought he was playing his best hockey as a member of the Flames of late.
And with that update, to Pat's point earlier, too, do you have to bring someone up if it's day-to-day? Because the only reason I don't like it is from the fact that, okay, you've got 12 forwards. Somebody gets sick or somebody gets a little nudged up. Then you're looking at it. You're up against it a little bit, trying to get another player in time or, you know, for the final game of the three-game road trip. Or you go 11-7. I mean, we do know that the Calgary Flames have ample defensemen on this trip, but it's not even necessarily something that probably has to happen in order for the Calgary Flames to continue on with two games remaining.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you probably want the extra forward, but then again, you'd have to put Mantha on IR, and that's the other thing. If it's only going to be one game, well, then you don't want to put him on IR because then he can't play Saturday, right? You have to have the minimum. If you go on IR, the earliest that he'd be able to return is next Tuesday against Vancouver. So, you know, if you don't want to send somebody down, if you don't want to put Mantha on IR, maybe you just go with what you've got and hope nobody gets a little ill prior to the game against Boston on Thursday and go with that. We'll see what they end up doing here in the next little bit. Wilsey, Vickers, Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable on a Wednesday. Gents, been a rough start for the Boston Bruins. Heck, you go to some different websites, there's been talk about, is Jim Montgomery's job maybe all of a sudden not as secure? Is he a guy who could be on the hot seat as head coach there? They're 6-7-1. They do hold down a playoff spot technically in the Eastern Conference, but they have a sub-500 record. This is a group that had 109 points last year. What do we make of this Boston group, the team that the Flames play Thursday night?
Yeah, it has been a tough start to them, not just record-wise. I mean, they're one game below 500 in the win-loss column. But you look at some stats. They are 27th in the NHL in possession. They're tied for 27th in goals for, 22nd in goals against, 29th on the power play. They're at 13.3%. When you think about who they can put out there on the PP, that number certainly is alarming. Just 20th on the penalty kill. They've taken the most penalties in the NHL. So you look at some of those team numbers, and they're not good. And then when you take a look at their lines and pairings, or at least when I take a look at their lines and pairings, they look a little top-heavy to me. So I love their first line. They've got a new first-line centerman in Elias Lindholm playing between Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak, although Pasta got benched the other night. So, you know, things are not going as well as you'd like them to when your best offensive player is, as Megan Mickelson would say, a grocery stick in the third period of a game. I like their second line as well, but I don't love their third and fourth lines. On defense, I absolutely love four or five of their guys, but I'm not in love with their third pairing. And maybe the biggest issue, at least so far this season, is that after giving Jeremy Swayman an 8-year, $66 million contract extension, he hasn't been great. 3.14, 894 in the 10 games that he's played in. They paid him to be an elite goaltender, which is what he turned into. But, fellas, how often have we seen this? A guy holds out for a contract, arrives at training camp or starts the preseason late, expects to hit the ground running when the regular season starts, and it doesn't happen. And sometimes that lasts for an entire season. So if the Bruins don't start getting better goaltending from their number one guy, I think it's going to be difficult for them to be the type of team they've been for a number of years.
Yeah, didn't Jeremy Swayman miss the entirety of training camp? Wasn't he signed basically right before the start of the season, and there were some murmurs as to whether or not he was actually going to start game one? So, Wilsey, I put that big asterisk on Jeremy Swayman. You mentioned .894 save percentage. As a whole, the Bruins have given up the 6 most goals in the NHL this season, which is a little out of the norm for them. And you just run through a few of their unrestricted free agent signings, whether it's Elias Lindholm, who I say this with a little bit of a caveat, but only has 8 points in 14 games. And you run through Nikita Zadorov, he's only got 4 assists in 14 games, still looking for his first goal on the season. And I wonder if it's a situation where you don't have your clear-cut number one goalie at the start of camp, so now he's playing catch-up, and like you said, Wilsey, it can take almost an entire year sometimes when you miss those key 3 to 4 weeks to get back onto what should be your normal schedule. You bring in some unrestricted free agents that maybe haven't meshed the way you had hoped when you were handing out some big contracts, and then you've just got a situation where it's one thing after another after another. We get to the point where the Boston Bruins, who I feel probably potentially overachieved a little bit last season after losing a couple of key centers, a couple of sort of quasi-franchise centers in Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. I wonder if what we're seeing now is more of what the expectation for the Boston Bruins perhaps should have been, but managed to exceed last season, and then the moves that they made this offseason just haven't started to pay off yet.
Well, okay, so I want to point something out when it comes to this Bruins team. Last year, they were – so, Wilsey, you throw out the possession numbers, and you know, 5-on-5, the Bruins sit 22nd overall in terms of 5-on-5 possession. Definitely not elite. They were lower last year over the course of 82 games. They were 24th in 5-on-5 possession last year. And so 24th in 5-on-5 possession correlating to 109 points, they're either super fluky or there has to be something else going on. And you know what? There was something else going on. You know what was going on last year? The Bruins had the best goaltending tandem on the planet, and one of the best goaltending tandems in a long time. And so just to pick up on what you said, Wilsey, I think that's a really important point. This Bruins team, since losing Bergeron and Krejci, this Bruins team over this season and last year, the way they play 5-on-5 has not been championship caliber, nor has it been elite. But what they did have is all-world goaltending and then some last year. So Jeremy Swayman last year was number 4 in the NHL in terms of goals saved above expected, and Linus Ullmark was number 7 in terms of goals saved above expected. Swayman, 18.4 goals saved above expected. Ullmark, 14.8. So that is 33 goals that the Bruins allowed less because of their goaltending based on what was expected. That is by far the best tandem in the NHL.
How many wins does that equal?
That probably equals 33 goals. That could equal up to, like, I don't know, you could probably make that 12 to 16 wins right there based on goaltending.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of wins over the course of 82. And then compare it to this year. To your point, Wilsey, Jeremy Swayman goes from being fourth in the NHL in goals saved above expected last year to 37th this year. Hasn't been horrible. He's right at expected. He's minus 0.2 in terms of goals saved above expected. So basically, he is playing at the same level the Bruins are playing at. So you have a team that is not elite 5-on-5 that gets full-on elite goaltending compared to a team that remains not elite 5-on-5 but gets average goaltending. Wilsey, that's why the Bruins are where they are, at least in my mind, to start the season.
Yeah, and I just looked it up. He signed on October 6th. I just don't think when you do that, you're putting yourself or your team in a position to succeed. So, yeah, that sounds like it's probably been the biggest drop-off for the Bruins season to season is, you know, they had two number one goaltenders last year. And this year you could argue that even though Jeremy Swayman has proven to be a number one, he's not playing like an elite number one like he has in the past. And they don't have as good a backup plan. They don't have as good a 1B as they once did. So I still think it's a talented team, a Bruins team that will probably be desperate on Thursday night. Now, the Flames are coming off a big win. There was a ton of energy on the trip last night at practice today, so they're feeling good about themselves. But they'd be better be ready to go to work tomorrow night, because I suspect the Bruins will be. This is a franchise that has set a very high standard, a high bar over the years, and they're not off to a good start. There's plenty of chatter about that inside of the city of Boston. So I'm expecting the Bruins to do what they normally do, and that's respond the right way. But who knows? Sometimes there's a downturn for a team, and I'm kind of wondering with some of the numbers that you guys have thrown out if that really started last season and we're really just seeing it in the wins and losses and points this season.
Chef's kiss for this segue for me, Wilsey, because I just dipped back to last season after listening to Pat mention the 33 goals saved above expected. They were also fourth overall in shooting percentage and second overall in PDO. So they were getting a little bit of the bump on the shooting percentage, bump on the goaltending, a little bit of luck, and maybe we're seeing a little bit of a regression to the mean.
Yep. Well, see what the Flames can do with that on Thursday night in Boston, game two of this three-game road trip before they roll into Saturday's game in Buffalo for a Saturday a.m. game back here in Calgary. Good stuff, Wilsey. We will talk to you on a game day Thursday. Thank you, pal.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Vergie back at Sportsnet 960 World Control and Cameron Hughes, our producers this hour. And this hour wraps up. So does the Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.